TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, cadet.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
So, as the old gem goes, what are you saying?
Don't really know.
Be straight up.
Really straight up?
Yeah.
Right, so I spoke to Shanice, let's not beat about the bush.
Yeah.
And she's kind of painted a different picture as to what you painted.
Really?
Really.
So what's she saying?
That you had basically said that you were interested in her.
No, I said we've got things in common, so obviously that's a bonus.
No, she said that you had said that you were interested in me and her.
But the conversation for me was so innocent. It was no like, oh yeah, I could.
But if she had shut you down,
I would have,
then what would have happened to the conversation?
I'm coupled up with you, Paige.
That doesn't matter. Like,
I said,
you miss out certain parts of the story, and this is only day two.
I don't know. I think that relationship is doomed. That's Love Island. It's running at 9 p.m. on Virgin Media One, or VMTV, as it's calling itself nowadays. James Dempsey, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
A lot of people said 2 Love Islands a year. It's just too much.
I kind of would probably tend to agree with that, but I have to, I'm going to, do an honesty reality check here and say that in previous years that I've talked about Summer Love Island, the first time I ever watched it was the summer before last year, so the year before, 2018. And I watched a week of it and I didn't get into it at all. And then I went off traveling for the summer and it had no appeal to me at all. And then last summer I watched the first week, and the first week is not a good week of Love Island. It's actually very boring because it's all these new people and they're all talking absolute rubbish and like it's boring, right? And you don't care about any of them.
Yeah.
And there's nobody even to root for or dislike yet. It just hasn't happened. You know, they haven't established themselves. And then I ended up watching all 55 episodes or however many there
that's
were.
A commitment.
Now, that is a relatively more easy commitment to make for certain people in the summertime because, you know, summertime can be a bit of a go slow. Certainly in the media realm, it is a more quiet time of the year. People, you know, there's less news going on, there's less politics, all that kind of stuff.
And there's
right?
less new TV shows.
Yes,
the summer.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's easier, you know, it's still a commitment to watch 55 hours of Love Island. But it's certainly easier to do that when you're not trying to keep up with your New Year's resolutions or whatever else is going on. So I don't know if it'll manage to sink its teeth into me. I decided if I'm going to talk about Love Island on this slot, I need to, you know, give it some kind of thought as to why it proves so popular. And like, it exists in that same kind of realm, you know, as Big Brother of reality TV, in which they just point cameras at people and... Except this time it is more produced, you know. Certainly there's no doubt that there is puppet string wielding going on amongst the production staff, and various romances are probably given more screen time if they think that'll be a hit, etc. But I think the reason why people like it is because it's gossip in real time, right?
Yeah.
And it's inconsequential gossip because these are people who have put themselves forward to be gossiped about. And we get to be a fly on the wall of their romantic entanglements and disentanglements and enjoy the spectacle of their rows and, you know, rubbernecking a bit as you watch them having their spats. And that's all fine. But like, I don't think there's anything more to it than that, right?
Yeah.
It is fundamentally just a completely shallow, bad reality TV show.
Sure.
And I think, and I say that as someone who has watched 55 hours of it last year. Now, the other thing that is quite interesting about it is how successful it has proven for ITV2 as a sort of channel in the UK and ITV as a brand worldwide. Because I thought it was astounding that last summer's according to what I read online, so, you know, take that with a pinch of salt. Last summer's Love Island made £77 million in advertising revenue for ITV2.
Yeah.
Which is a colossal amount of money for a lesser channel, you know, ITV2.
Yeah.
It's not even the prime time.
Yeah, where they put the reruns of Only Fools and
Horses.
Well, not Only Fools and Horses,
but
that kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. And not only that, but even the film that they have put on before each debut episode of Love Island has seen a huge boost in its ratings. And then there's the actual quite like insidious isn't maybe the right word, but certainly not that far away from it either. kind of the way they weave branding and commercialism into the show. Like, for example, all of the clothes they wear are sold on various websites and you can find them.
Yeah.
All of the music that has played, ITV just signed a deal with Universal Music this year, and now their Universal will be promoting its artists on the show. And when you're watching it, if you are watching it on sort of like the, you know, I think it's called the ITV Hub, which is their sort of player, you know, online player, it links to like Spotify, or it links to where you can download the music and buy the music. So it's, you know, synergistic, if that is the word we're looking for. Nefarious and evil.
Yes, it's just selling us stuff, yeah. Really.
Apart from that, it has proven to be a worldwide hit, because there's versions of it in the US, which was arguably a flop. Mm. But actually, the UK one is a cult hit in the US on Hulu, on their streaming service. And like, a cult hit in the US is obviously going to make you fairly few bucks at the same time. This is an Australian version. The UK version airs here. As far as I understand, it airs in New Zealand and Australia as well. Then you have foreign language versions as well. For what is a really simple and bad premise, they are spinning gold out of this.
Yeah, and what's amazing about it is that we, I would have thought we'd reached the point of peak reality televisions, you know, that people go, oh, I've seen there, you know, been there, done that kind of thing. But it seems as if each new generation discovers whatever the latest reality TV show is, as if for the first time, as if no one's ever done this before.
Yeah,
and they can't see the joins, at least for the first couple of dozen series.
True. And there's a lot been said about the role that particularly Love Island and its production team are playing with regard to the mental health of its participants. Mm. Because as far as I'm aware, at least two of them have taken their own lives. And that is obviously a huge, you know, when you go on a show like this, you open yourself up, you know, to great exposure. And I mean great in the sense of large and immense, right? People are pouring over everything in your life, and it probably is very confronting when you leave the show. And I know, you know, people have spoken in the past about how the show has now developed a kind, they have on-site counsellors at all times to deal with the participants and what's going on, and to help them navigate their way once they come back out. Now, what's interesting about it is like how it creates a career for you by appearing on this show. You know, you become an Instagram influencer overnight, and you can flog, I think if you're a man, you end up flogging like protein powders and exercise regimes. And if you're a woman, I don't know what.
I think they do a lot of just appearances at nightclubs.
And selling clothes as well, you know. And I read one criticism of the show was that it has been taken to task for, you know, fast fashion and disposable fashion because of how readily people are doing. But if you're coming for depth and analysis and world-changing television, that's not what you're getting here, because what this show is about, it's kind of really odd. It's like a real No Sex Please, We're British, right? They want it to be this kind of ooh la la, sexy, oh my God, what's going on? What did they do? Blah, blah, blah. And yet they punish anyone that does that at the same time, right?
But does it depend on, because there's a, you know, degree of alchemy that they can't create, in that they don't know how the characters will interact with each other, and what you want is esteem and good row, or want them to be an enormous knobhead.
Yeah, exactly.
And so is there any signs that that's going to happen in this series?
I think what I find the least interesting thing about the show is how they all are cookie cutter images of each other, right? Yeah. Like, even if you look at the men this time around, like, I don't know how many of them have literally the same cuff tattoo down the same arm. Like, they are cut from these very same cloths.
Yeah, just have like a chubby guy go
in
there.
You know? I actually think what is odd about the show is in 2020, when, you know, TV shows are, many people would complain, too woke and too like liberal, etc. This is like a prime example of a kind of show, like, I think it's the kind of show they'd put on in a country to up the birth rate, you know? Yeah. It's like straight men and women of,
it is kind of somewhat Aryan.
Yes,
indeed,
completely.
The whole thing.
You know, they're all straight, they're all cis hetero, they're all, you know, as far, okay, there are, this time there's more races involved than in previous years, but, you know, it is just very much a, like, down the middle of the road, normal, quote unquote, straight show, right? Mm. And that's kind of boring, a little bit boring in 2020.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what's interesting about it at all, to be honest with you. Right, anyway, a couple of bits of TV news. Richard Madden, he being the bodyguard, has a new show.
So he's just signed on with Priyanka Chopra, who is late. She's a Bollywood turned Hollywood star. She's one of Meghan Markle's best friends. She's the wife of one of the Jonas Brothers and a TV star and Bollywood star, obviously in her own right as well. She starred in Quantico, which was this FBI kind of show. They both have signed on to appear in Citadel, which is going to be an Amazon Video Prime show. I have talked on this segment about other Amazon Video Primes. Will we ever get to the one that I think encourages people to sign on? This one maybe has, at least it has a hook in it for me, in the sense that it comes from the Russo brothers, who are the sort of directors and writers of the last two Avengers movies. They're very good at big spectacle action.
Yeah.
And what is of interest about it is it's an international show, right? So Priyanka Chopra and Richard Madden will be starring in the American version, the American one of it. But there will also be an Indian, an Italian and a Mexican, like, spin-off shows that all interact and cross with each other at the same time.
Okay, now, is this a bit like that other show you talked about where there were people were interviewed?
Yeah, was it Criminal? I think it was Criminal. Anyway, yeah. Criminal France, Criminal UK. Except the that international premise was useless in the sense that it meant nothing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas in this, it's all about a big global crossover interweaving storytelling.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that sounds interesting.
Yes.
And is it like drugs or international gangs?
It's espionage, as far as I can tell.
Right, okay. And Rachel Bloom, the crazy ex-girlfriend, she has a new show.
She has just signed on. So she has taken a big break from creative industries because I think she had a child with her husband. Mm. And Crazy Ex-Girlfriend ended last year. Kind of, it dipped in quality as it went along for me, but those first few seasons are actually just excellent. And if you're looking for something on Netflix, go for that if you can find nothing else. But she has just signed on to produce and co-star in a new show called Mother Mary. Now, it comes from the Upright Citizens Brigade, which is this like American...
it's a great name.
It is. It's an improv group. Mm. And one of the stars of that, Betsy Sapporo, she has created the show in which she plays Mary, the laziest woman in the world, who is chosen by God to become the mother of the second coming of Jesus.
Okay, this is going to get banned in Brazil as well.
And at the same time, Rachel Bloom is co-starring as Krista, who plays the mother of the Antichrist in the show.
Okay. That's going to, it sounds great, but it's going to annoy a lot of people. Right, we do have to take a break. Two more shows to talk about.
TV. On the radio.
Roll it there, cadet.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Who do you think you are? Out on my stage coming for me and my club? And I think I gave you your start.
Well, unless you're my Aunt Charmaine, who let me parade around in her house coat while my mama was at work, you did not give me my start.
That was a good one, Ruby girl.
How would you know what's good? I only put you on to clear the club so I can go home.
What? Oh, no. No. No, no, no. You leave Porkchop out of this. You want to come for me? You come for me.
There you go, that's AJ and the Queen. All episodes are streaming now on Netflix. I don't want you to spoil it for people too much, but who plays the Queen?
In the Crown season? No, so this is, right, so this is obviously RuPaul Charles going as RuPaul Charles.
Is this RuPaul? Oh no, is he acting as himself?
Yes, okay. Not as in, sorry, no.
Yeah.
So he's playing Robbie, who is a drag queen, also known as Ruby Red.
Right, okay.
And RuPaul Charles, who, if you are unfamiliar with, you probably haven't been on the internet in the last 10 years, is the most famous drag queen in the world as RuPaul, and has developed this very big global empire, right, with from a seedling nothing reality TV show, right, called RuPaul's Drag Race, which has become very prolific with international versions and hugely popular and sell-out tours and all that kind of stuff, right? But there would be still a very large swathe of the viewing public that has never seen it and never will, and so be it. Netflix signed on in 2018 for a show created by him and Michael Patrick King, who is one of the co-creators and writers of Sex and the City. And they both created it and wrote it, and RuPaul stars in it as Ruby Red, the drag queen.
And is it, technically, is that his first time acting?
No, he did appear. He has appeared in Girl Boss, which was a one season, not great show on Netflix, which I didn't like at all. And he had a few bits on. He had cameo roles in various different movies, as well as Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Okay.
Broad City. He has a recurring role in Broad City. And I would say Broad City actually uses RuPaul's acting ability to his best, because he's not the greatest of actors, right? Mm. And I actually want to really start this by saying this is a bad television show.
Okay.
But this is like my Mrs. Brown's Boys, because I cannot help but like it. I was looking for how I could sort of justify this. And the famous filmmaker John Waters said, like, you have to have very good taste in order to understand what is bad taste.
Yes.
And to like bad taste. So I'm chalking it down to that I actually just have really good taste. It is not good.
Mm.
First of all, it is really oddly conceived as a television show. It is somehow all at once a 50-minute single episode. You know, the episodes are 50 minutes, which is way, way, way too long, right? 50-minute drama / comedy / pratfall sitcom. The scoring music is so distractingly bad. The production value is threadbare. The plot involves AJ, who is a child who is growing up in the same apartment building as Ruby, whose mother is a drug addict. This is not a spoiler. His mother is a drug addict prostitute. and then AJ ends up stowing away on Ruby's, you know, camper van, minivan, whatever, while Ruby is going on tour around the southern states of America, while being chased by her lover, who has stolen all her money and now has homicidal intent towards her.
Right.
And basically each episode sort of, not quite each episode, but it's about Ruby touring and stopping in various bars along the way and performing and learning life lessons and weren't we friends and the greatest.
And Ruby has a child who ostensibly abducted.
Yes. Yes. So, and is bringing, and the child is not nice. Right? And the child, first of all, looks like a very young Madonna, which I cannot find, but very distracting.
Okay. Is this a boy child or a girl child?
I kind of don't want to go into that because that is a sort of plot line in and of itself, right? So I was careful with my lack of pronoun usage.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to say AJ, right?
Okay.
AJ comes from the most precocious school of child acting you have ever seen. So AJ is really annoying.
Yeah.
And then there is also a subplot involving Lewis, who is also known as Cocoa Butter, who is a blind drag queen who has the most hilariously off-colour, bad-taste, blind sight gags, if that's not an odd term even in and of itself, which I sort of thought, well, at least the actor must be blind, so this kind of is all right. No, the actor is completely fully sighted, so it is just bad, 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 bad. And yet, I have happily watched 7 episodes and I will continually watch all of it right to the end. Now, I am a fan of RuPaul and that whole empire, right? So will this manage to convert any people who aren't already acolytes thereof? No, I do not think so. It's badly scripted. It's badly acted. It's hammy. It's bad across the board.
Might it be bad for RuPaul's career?
I don't think. Now, here's what I think is the interesting thing, right? This is so bad that it does not deserve a second series. Mm. And I will put up my hand up and say that. I'm enjoying it, but it's bad.
Mm.
Where I think the interesting thing is, how much clout does RuPaul have with Netflix? Because RuPaul has signed deals with Netflix to stream all of the, you know, the empirical shows that she has made on Netflix. And they, if you look at when Netflix occasionally releases like the most popular shows in the UK and Ireland, RuPaul's Drag Race is always in the top 10.
Mm.
It is probably a big draw globally in terms of people streaming it all the time. So RuPaul undoubtedly has some clout with,
put
it this way, recently there was Drag Race UK, which was on BBC Three. That has now navigated to BBC One. It's going to be on BBC One after Jonathan, or not after Jonathan Ross, that's quite some time ago. After Graham Norton, rather.
Yeah.
Admittedly, 11 o'clock on a Friday night is not prime time, but it's still BBC One. It's not BBC Two.
Yeah, and you're a good audience inheritance.
Absolutely.
As well. Yeah.
So, and Graham Norton is in the show, which will help lead into that as well. So RuPaul has power and has clout. I could see this getting a second season as a cursory, you know.
Just not to.
Yeah. Right? Don't argue the star.
Yeah. Right.
But it's not good.
It's not good. Okay, yeah. Crap, but watch it.
Yeah.
Is the recommendation there. Right. Third show is The Outsider, currently on Sky Atlantic on Mondays at 9 p.m, though you can also watch it on demand. Here's a clip.
I'm as baffled by this conflicting evidence as you are.
Carrie murdered a child. Everything he does after that is like he's begging us to catch him. What kind of criminal does that?
The evidence and the counter evidence. I'm struggling with that.
Where are you going with all this?
Is that Terry Maitland? 70 miles away. The same day, the same time as Frankie Peterson was murdered.
A human being cannot exist in two realities at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Cops say that kind of thing all the time. On paper, this should be a good show.
Yeah. So this is exact opposite effect that, you know, AJ McQueen is. This has all of the ingredients of a really, really good show, but I didn't like it. So it's a HBO glossy drama. It's made by the same man who bizarrely made Blues Brothers way back when in the 1970s, mm-hmm. but has since gone on to produce very glossy dramas, including recently The Night Of... with Riz Ahmed, which took me a while to get into that, but then it did, you know, it got its teeth into me, which is apt here because that's how the boy gets killed in this, which you find out very early on. Now, what I didn't like about this was I found it relentlessly grim and violent, and in the first 2 hours, I found it just so miserable and hard going to like get through that it was a chore, you know? This is not a binge-worthy show because after a while... After even 40 minutes, I was ready to sort of take a break from the episode and then come back to it because it was hugely violent. It opens with a very, very graphically horrific death of a child, which is not a pleasant thing to watch. And I wasn't into it. Aside from that, it has a very convoluted, difficult plot line. So if you are second screening this one, which is how many people watch television these days, you're going to be so completely lost. I will let you know there is a very well-written description of each episode on its Wikipedia article because I went to do my homework, but I don't like shows that make me go and do my homework. Like it was my own fault for not giving it my absolute full attention, but it just it wasn't so... a police procedural is great, but this is a long hour of misery, right? Nice. Now, it is written by... It's based on a novel by Stephen King, so it has this kind of weird... supernatural kind of plot device running through it as well. You're bringing elements, I guess, of the first season of True Detective into this, along with, I would say, the styling of The Night Of.
Yeah.
The cast is universally very good. You have Ben Mendelsohn, this very recognisable Australian character actor, as the main detective, who buys into believing the guilt of the suspect right away because he's still grieving the death of his own son from... cancer, I think. And then you have Julianne Nicholson playing the wife of the suspect, who's played by Jason Bateman, who also directs the first two episodes actually. And and it's beautifully shot. Like, there on paper I have which is a very like Love Island way of talking about things. On paper it had all the right elements for me. It just and maybe with, you know, maybe when I'm watching it one episode at a time, I will enjoy it more. I just, for me, found this long stretch of, I think it was even more than 2 hours. It was like nearly 2 hours and 10 minutes of grim misery. Just a bit too much to take on a stormy, you know, Monday night or in January when it's dark and cold outside.
Yeah, and those things are usually alleviated by a nice bit of character sketching. Is there that even?
No. Like, I mean, there is plenty of characters involved in this, but there's no... I found very little sort of, you know, not even like sprinklings of humour anywhere. I found it just a constant drudge of... gruff, miserable, misery, police work and scary, chilly, freaky bits. And I just was like, ah, oh, give me a joke, you know?
Yeah.
Now, what I have read is Cynthia Erivo, recently nominated for an Oscar for Harriet, She is going to appear, I think, in the next episode, and she has been, in all the stuff I've read, the standout of the show. So yeah. Hopefully she will bring a bit more life into the thing. I just found it a bit grim.
Yeah, but apparently RuPaul turns up in episode 6, so it'll be brilliant. James MC, thanks a million.
Thanks.